Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
G'day mates, it's Bee Buster here. And before the episode begins, I would just like to let you know that Be Scared, which is produced along with Studio 71, features scary stories from around the globe on a weekly basis that aim to fuel your nightmares with a smile. And if you enjoy the podcast, it would be great if you could hit that subscribe button and drop a review. But thanks for listening, guys. And without further ado, let's begin. I really don't know exactly where to start with this, but years after this incident, I had a flashback with all the details while talking to my girlfriend on the phone and telling each other our memories. This happened at the beginning of 2023, though. I, a male, 22 at the time, was working as a terminal attendant at one of the biggest airports in Europe. My job description was mostly to give directions to arriving and departing passengers in this airport, as a big city as it was, to solve their problems, to solve visa and passport-related problems, stuff like this. Now, for some reasons I can't tell you exactly which airport it is, but you can probably guess from the details that I'll give. Since the airport is actually really huge and in a very key location, it is one of the transfer points for passengers coming and going from Asia, Africa, Europe, and America. So it was in the nature of my job to encounter very strange types of people and events. I was working 12-hour shifts at this point, some days at night and some days during the day, and the area that I was working in was determined by daily assignments. This incident happened during my 12th-hour night shift on the transfer floor for the airport, the common point where international passengers wait for passport control before picking up their luggage, and where the passengers of all incoming international flights flow. Actually, when we work, we're supposed to wait at the fixed point when passengers don't specifically call for us, but it was like 3 o'clock at night, and since flights and passenger traffic slow down at that time of night, I decided to patrol around a bit. I left my station and went to the gate of the only arrival flight at that time of night. I decided to wait there in case passengers needed help when the gate opened. After a while, the plane pulled up to the gate. The gate opened, and a lot of normal-looking people walked out of the gate and into the transfer center. All except that woman. That strange-looking woman who, honestly, made me feel cursed by the cold January air. She was a brunette in her late 20s, covered in dirt and torn clothes. Her hair was missing in some places, and the hair that was there was rather unkempt and, I think, a bit burnt as well. When she saw me in my uniform, with unusually large pupils, she walked up to me, looked scared and confused. "Excuse me, do you work here? I need help." "Of course you need help." I wanted to take her arm because she was having trouble walking, but the smell emanating from her, don't judge, it wasn't a normal sweat smell, but it smelled like she was already dead, made my nose hurt, and I immediately abandoned the idea. I sat her down on a seat reserved for passengers, and I stood opposite her and asked her in a calm voice how I could help her. I had a very bad experience. That's why I'm running away from there. I haven't eaten for days, and I think that there was something in the water they gave me on the plane. Since I drank it, I don't feel well, and my mind is all fuzzy. I didn't find what she was saying convincing. I thought that she was in some kind of mental breakdown because her gestures and intonations when she spoke were very strange. But I was also familiar with the aviation rules, and I knew that something like this should be reported immediately to the police. When I told her this, she did not like the idea, and she stood up and shook me by the shoulders and shouted, "No police, never the police." Dude, she started laughing too, looking up at the ceiling like there was something up there. The woman was making strange gestures with her hands, but her cheerful demeanor was broken by a sudden burst of crying. "No police, they won't like it." "You mean they, the police? But that's their job." "Who said anything about the cops? I'm talking about the people who did this to me." As she said this, she lifted up the burnt hair that had fallen on her forehead, and I saw one of the strangest things that I've ever seen. Look, I've seen a lot of strange tattoos because of the environment that I studied and lived in, but this was different. Right in the center of her forehead was a tattoo that looked like the barcodes on the products in the grocery store, with some numbers underneath. At first, I thought it was just a strange fashion sense, or maybe something for aesthetic purposes, but her strange behavior in some documentaries that I had seen made me think that it was probably used by, well, human traffickers to mark people, so that they could be easily identified and caught when they escaped. When she realized that I couldn't help her the way that she wanted, she at least wanted to use my phone, but I told her that she was not allowed to use my phone due to the airport security rules, and that she could use the payphones if she wanted to. Of course, she didn't have any money with her, and I was also not allowed to give her any money. Since she showed aggressive behavior towards me every time I insisted on talking to the police, I finally decided to do it secretly and brought her some food and water before going to the cops. When I arrived at the police station on the transfer floor, the policemen were taking advantage of the calm of the night to just rest, and when I told them what had happened to me and pointed to the woman, they told me that she was just one of the refugees coming into our country. My country hosts so many illegal immigrants and refugees that it is normal for them to think like that. And that she was acting like that because she wanted us to let her enter illegally. They didn't take it very seriously, in other words, and unfortunately, I just had to leave without any solution. When I went back to the woman, I realized that she had not touched the food and water that I had brought her, and repeatedly refused to consume them with fear in her eyes. I decided to have a conversation with the woman, so as not to be too judgmental. When I asked her her name, she gave me a very strange answer that I'd never heard before. It was like a name from some ancient language, and even now I don't remember exactly what she said. When I asked her where she came from and where she was going, she said that she didn't know. To get this information, I took her passport and her boarding pass from her hand. I don't remember exactly, but she was coming from an Asian country, and her next destination was not written on the boarding pass, so her ticket was valid only until here, which was very strange. At this point, I decided to end our conversation, which was not very productive in the first place, and leave her alone to observe from a distance. I had to go back to my station for some paperwork anyway, and decided to take care of it in the meantime. Later that night, at around 6 a.m, my other colleague was due to arrive at the station to hand in my shift. I was going to exit through the door, where they were going to enter to the transfer center, where we were, and before I left, I decided to stop by again on my way to see this strange female visitor. When I went up to her, she was holding a book in her hand. It was a book with old covers and yellowed paper, but I didn't understand what was written in it until she pointed at me and called me over. Even then, I didn't understand it. It was a book written in a language that I didn't know, and I don't want you to think that I was making it up, but it was a book with strange figures of people and other drawings. The woman pointed to one of the drawings and said, "This is how they do this." "They do what like this?" I was confused. "Can you be a bit more specific?" When I said that, she shook her head from side to side laughing. She had an expression as if I wouldn't understand even if she explained it. I then told her that a friend of mine would be arriving soon in my place, and that if she had any problems or needs, that she could contact them as she wished. I gave her directions to the restroom, where she could get food, the police station, and the ticket office. After a few seconds of looking at my face, she then thanked me in tears and took my hands in both of hers and looked me in the eyes. I didn't know exactly what had happened to her, but at that moment, my heart honestly broke, and I put my other hand over hers and I nodded. It was time to leave when my friend who was coming behind me to take my place touched me, and I introduced them to the woman and secretly informed them about the situation. My friend told me that they were going to take special care of her, said goodbye, and I finished my shift for the day. When I woke up the next day, I texted my friend and I asked them how she was doing. They told me that after I introduced them to her, they left to take care of another passenger, and that after that, they never saw her for the rest of the day. They said that when they asked the passport police and ticket officers, that they told them that they were busy enough as it was, and that they didn't pay that much attention to people and brushed him off again. I never did see this woman on my next shift, and I never heard from her again. But the whole situation, it still gives me the goosebumps when I remember it. I would be interested in your thoughts about the incident, though. If there's anything that I missed, or if you want to ask any questions, then please do, because I want to know what this was all about, and I really want to know if she's okay.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
This happened to me 15 years ago when I was 13, and it still gives me the chills. For context, I grew up on a cattle ranch in the middle of the Great Plains in the US. A very remote area, and our house was right in the middle of pastures, where our cattle lived about 5 miles down a gravel road from a two-lane blacktop. The closest neighbor was at least 2 miles away, another rancher. The closest gas station, about 17. In short, we were a long ways from anywhere, and it's a very independent lifestyle for sure. When live cattle get bought or sold in areas like that, they are transferred by semi-trucks with these huge trailers. Some of you may have even seen one sometime. Many of the people in that business own their own trucks and operate independently, picking up loads from buyers or sellers, as jobs come mainly by word-of-mouth relationships. Background checks are pretty much non-existent. Lots of under-the-table payments, and as such, the community of drivers can be notoriously sketchy, I guess you could say. Many are very good people, just doing their job, but some are big meth abusers, making them sort of unpredictable, I guess. The meth abuse typically starts as a side effect to working very long hours and going on long hauls alone so often. This all begins with my parents leaving for the weekend to take my little sister on a trip to Dallas. My dad, he had a load of cattle coming in from Nebraska scheduled to arrive around midnight, and this was the first time that I would be home alone to take in cattle like this myself. The process is simple enough. I mean, they just back into a load chute and drop off the cattle while the receiver counts them and signs a slip confirming that they all arrived. So I wasn't too worried. I had been around my dad doing it many times anyway. My dad did give me good instructions, though, to not tell whoever showed up as the trucker that I was there alone, which, honestly, I believed helped me out a lot later. Anyways, they leave for Dallas, and I wait around until midnight, then start watching up towards the dirt road that I know the guy was supposed to be coming in on, and I don't end up getting a glimpse of his truck lights until at least 1 a.m. When I finally see him off in the distance on that road, he stops completely and sits there for like 30 minutes. All I can see is his truck and trailer lights, and no one comes out there, so I know it's him. When he finally starts moving again, I go out to meet him at the landing chute and help him line his trailer up to back up. This guy steps out once he gets backed up and easily weighs about 300 pounds, and he is one of the dirtiest people that I had ever laid my eyes on. Quite honestly, I don't think that he had changed his clothes in days and had spilled food and drinks and cow poop all over himself. He started to talk about being late in very random directions, kind of rambling nonsense. No clue what he was trying to say exactly, but he may have been drunk and having a hard time keeping his excuse together. He mentioned a flat tire and also running low on diesel, then something about animals on the road or whatever. He eventually asked how old I was, though, and when I told him, he said, "Mighty young to be out here dealing with this. You need to be somewhere out there chasing some girls. Do you like girls or boys? Don't matter to me, none. I like both." I was thinking, what the heck? But told him definitely women. Growing up around a lot of blue-collar guys, I wasn't a stranger to raunchy talk, but this was one of the crazier things anyone had ever directed towards me. He then went into an absolute unhinged story about chasing women when he was young back in Missouri, apparently. And the gist of it was that he'd been hooking up with a girl that he met at a bowling alley for months at one point until one day he went to his family reunion and she was there, apparently. Turns out that they were second cousins. But that didn't bother us none. We kept doing it for another year. I've hardly said a thing at this point, and he'd been talking to me for at least 20 minutes. Once he gave me a gap, I said, "Hey, we should probably unload these, yeah?" And said my mum was back at the house and would probably wonder what was taking so long. He grumbled a bit while making some crazy sexual remarks and some comments, then climbed up onto the loading area to open his back gate. These cattle trailers are huge, mind you, and have a lot of different compartments inside them. Putting a few cattle in at a time in bunches, then shutting them in the compartments, makes loading them easier. And they're also safer on journeys because it prevents them running all over each other. This one, for instance, had 6,700-pound cattle on there. So, he let off that first group, and I counted them, and then he got into the trailer and opened up the next compartment, and let off that bunch. For the third compartment, he was in there shaking the gate around and grumbling nonsense, and then starts yelling out to me that he needs me to come in and help him. I was already very sketched out by being alone near this very perverted dude, but this threw my alarm bells off completely. I mean, you have to understand that never have I once had any trucker ask me or seen anyone else be asked to go onto a trailer with them, and this huge dude was clearly just trying to get me into that tight space. I told him that I needed to stay outside to count, and then he shook it a bit more and tried to get me to come in there again, said that he really, really needed a hand. I told him that I'm not getting in the trailer with him, and he needed to figure it out. After a lot more back and forth with this, he finally opened the gate. Those came off and had two more compartments left that he tried the same routine with both of them. I just kept saying, "No way, man," but honestly, I was freaking out a bit. By the time that we finally had all of the cattle off, he was in a much less happy mood and started calling me all sorts of names for not helping him. He then tried to get next to me to jump into his truck to grab the paperwork that I needed to sign from his glove box, and I again had to bicker with him about grabbing it himself, as I was not turning my back on this guy for even a moment. He eventually caved, got the paper, I signed it and told him to head out, and I was going home. I ran back over to the house, which was like 100 yards away, and I watched him from the front window sit out there for an hour, as I didn't want to go to sleep until I knew that he had left. Finally, though, he pulled off, and by that time I went to sleep, it was around 4 a.m. What should have been a 20-minute interaction turned into a super creepy attempted, who knows what, by some deliverance-type trucker, and I am so glad that I never, ever thought about getting into that trailer. The point of me sharing this story is to illustrate just how quickly a hike can turn into a potentially life-threatening scenario that takes you off of the trail. So back during COVID, a friend of mine who was an experienced backpacker invited me to go on a three-day hike. Invited me to go on a three-day hike with him in Bankhead National Forest, Alabama. I had never really hiked before and had no equipment, but he told me exactly what I needed, and we went to REI to buy equipment. I bought about $600 worth of stuff, including a backpack, camel pack, hammock, tarp, emergency equipment, rations, etc. Now, before we left, we weighed our packs and we both had about 40 pounds of gear, which he said was a little on the heavier side, but safer. We printed out some maps of the forest that included trails and streams. We planned a 22-mile hike over 3 days, giving us time to fish because we were really into fishing at the time. The first day went by fine. It was 98 degrees and humid, typical for summer in Alabama. He told me to take a sip from my camel pack every 2 minutes, and really drilled that into me, so I followed that rule religiously. We hiked 7.5 miles and set up for the night. We saw a deer swimming down the river, which was pretty neat. But the second day, that was when things went wrong. We fished a bit in the morning and saw a 4-foot long-nosed gar, which was pretty cool. Then we went hiking further upstream. It was almost 100 degrees at this point, and by noon we were running pretty low on water, so we looked at the map and planned to get more at the next stream. However, the next stream was dried up. Over the course of the afternoon, we carried on from stream to stream, only to find all of them were dried up. We got desperate and checked the map for off-trail streams, and went about a half mile off-trail to find one that seemed promising, but it was mostly mud. We were so desperate for water, though, that we attempted to pump from the muddy water with our filters, but in the end, it ended up clogging up our filters. We were in a really bad spot, half a mile off trail, 5 miles from the last water source, and it was already almost evening at this point. So, we abandoned the original hike plan and made a mad dash back to the last known water location. By the time that we got there, it was almost dark. I was feeling a bit exhausted, I'll admit, but otherwise fine. However, my friend, who was the experienced one, mind you, started vomiting and trembling uncontrollably. He couldn't drink water without immediately throwing it up, and couldn't stand or really even move without his muscles contracting, in what he described as the most painful thing that he had ever felt. I set up both of our hammocks and picked him up and placed him in his. We had no cell reception, it was dark, and we still had 6 miles to go to get back to where we needed to get to. The next day, he was a little bit better, but it took a very long time to make the hike back, as he was constantly stopping to rest or to throw up. It was quite a battle to get back to where we needed to go, but eventually we found our way. This shows, though, that even if you are experienced, your situation can go from routine to, well, literally dying and unable to function in less than a day. If I wasn't with him, he probably would have died. perhaps off of the trail, deliriously searching for water or something. I am now sure that many of these cases involve someone suffering from dehydration, hypoglycemia, or low electrolytes, driving them to go off trail in confusion, and unfortunately, to die. I have always been a staunch atheist and not a believer in the paranormal at all, but I saw something in Albania, and I cannot get it out of my head. I would like to start this off with a bit of a history lesson too. So, during the Second World War, Albania was occupied by the Nazis. After the Second World War, Albania decided that the best way to fend off fascism in the future was to become a communist and isolationist country. They closed their borders in 1946 and declared themselves the world's first atheist nation in 1967. Religion was outlawed in 1967, and religious buildings were repurposed or destroyed. Previously, Albania was a mix of primarily Catholicism and Islam, and just because it was not legal does not mean a person will stop practicing their faith, right? Catholics were seen as a special threat due to a perceived loyalty to the Holy See over the state. Shkodër, a city in northern Albania, housed a prison that held and tortured practitioners of Catholicism. Many people died there too, and they refused to give up fellow practitioners under extreme forms of torture. Now, this prison is a part of the museum called the Site of Witness and Memory. The first part details the events leading up to and following the outlawing of religion by Enver Hoxha, and the second part, well, that details what went on in the prison. At the end, you are permitted to walk into the prison and its cells, and on the bottom floor, some cells display prominent people who were held there and resistance in the face of a concentration camp. Others display anti-religious propaganda, and some tell stories of camp conditions and how information was shared throughout the camp. Most of the cells are empty, but you can walk inside of them. Each measure about 5 feet by 5 feet, and the last room is much larger. It is where the inmates were brought for questioning. The original desk, typewriter, and telephone are all still there, as well as a chair where the inmates would have sat. Now, there is a second story to the prison, and I went upstairs to check it out. But all of the cells were empty, and to be sure I didn't miss anything, I poked my head into each one as I made my way down the hallway. Once I was sure the cells were empty, I began to walk back to go downstairs. When, out of the corner of my eye, in one of the cells, I swear to you that I catch a black figure. I caught a surprising amount of detail for only catching a glance, but it was about 5'6", emaciated, and was standing head against the corner, hands on its face and facing away from me, pure black and with shadows spreading out away from it. At first, I genuinely thought that it was a cardboard cutout that I'd missed, so I took a couple of steps back to check, but when I did, the room was completely empty. I was also overtaken by a sudden sense of what I can only describe as pure fear. I wasn't in any danger, I guess, but I don't think that I was ever that scared before. In fact, I ran out of that museum. I'm sure I got a couple of odd looks from security and other attendees, but quite honestly, I really didn't care at that point. And ever since then, I just have not been able to shake what I saw. I don't think I believe in the paranormal, but I also just have no explanation as to what I saw. It looked and it felt very real. I came across this place and I just thought that you guys might have some answers, and so that's why I'm here and I'm sharing this. Is there more to this life than just the physical, or was I just going crazy at the time and seeing things? So, I was trying to sleep in my dorm the other night, but for some reason I just couldn't. Then, out of nowhere, I felt movement from underneath me, so distinct that I honestly thought that it was my pet snake. I put my flashlight on and saw that she was in her tank. So I laid back down and closed my eyes, still fully awake and now a bit uneasy. Mind you, because I've been asked about this, I was completely sober, no weed, alcohol, or anything. But then, my door, that was completely shut, opened on its own. I have three roommates, but one was at her boyfriend's, and I heard the other two talking faintly and far away in the living room. And then, after a few seconds, some kind of force smacked me in the left eye, and I see a flash of white. I get up, arm in the air, ready to start swinging, and the door instantly closes. Doesn't slam, but definitely closes. I turn the flashlight on, radically swinging it around, looking for anything, but nobody's in the room and there's really nothing there. I get up and immediately open the door and hear my roommates again from the back of the apartment in the living room, maybe 15 steps away. I didn't hear running, walking, breaking, nothing. I ask them if someone came into my room and smacked me, and they both said no. I explained what happened, and they both said that they heard the door open and close, but neither went into my room. I believe that they didn't touch me because, one, I didn't see or hear anyone come in, and admittedly my room was messy, so in the dark I would have heard them step on a thing or two before getting to the bed, and two, it's incredibly out of character of them if they did. We're friends, but roommates nonetheless, and we won't go into each other's rooms if the doors are closed. We especially don't hit or smack each other. Nor was I or anyone in a fight or bad place with each other at this point. I'm freaked out, I won't lie, and I guess I'm looking for a rational explanation for what this is, because the alternative, well, that scares me.
G'day mates, it's Bee Buster here. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Bee Scared Podcast. And please, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode too. Also, it would be much appreciated if you could share this new podcast with your friends and family, and on social media too. Thanks again for listening, guys, and I'll see you mates in the next one.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.